So the first thing we need to do is to discuss a little bit about the relation between dynamics and symmetries. So as you remember, symmetries is the standard model way, at least the electroweak sector, whereas dynamics will be what you will use to try to describe like strongly coupled QCD or QCD at low energies. So imagine we have a new, every time I say strong, I mean new, external dynamics. What it means is that this theory is going to contain interesting stuff, but it's going to be very hard to deal with. It's going to be difficult because you need some non-perturbative tool to describe the strongly coupled theory. If you want to hear how difficult it is to deal with non-perturbative dynamics, ask Mark. He works on lattice. This is one non-perturbative tool. And it's long and difficult and hard just to get results from the lattice. So many particle physicists fear the lattice and also fear weighting. So we need to move ahead. And one thing we do often is to say, OK, so I have strong dynamics. I'm going to add what I know already, symmetries. And with symmetries, what we are going to tell is we will be able to say something, statements, about, for example, suppressions and leading order results. And we are going to give an example right now. So let's do an example. Let's take strong dynamics and add symmetries and see what we can see. So a good example, I think, of these symmetries is called custodial symmetry in the standard model. We are doing homework trying to obtain what are the modifications on the rho parameters, right? Delta rho. And in the standard model, delta rho is equal to 0. And the reason is that it is a custodial symmetry protecting the rho parameter, this relation of the rho parameter. So we are going to see that in detail and see how we will impose a custodial symmetry on a strongly coupled sector and obtain the same protection. So let's do it first for the Higgs mechanism. So in the standard model with a Higgs, custodial symmetry is something that shows up as an accidental symmetry. And it's also an approximate symmetry. So let's see why it's accidental and why it's approximate. We are going to take the Higgs doublet, phi, and we are going to form, instead of just phi plus phi zero, we are going to form another combination, a big matrix, phi, that is going to be, in this case, yes, 1 over square root of 2, of epsilon EB my Higgs doublet, and the other column is going to be just phi A. So instead of talking on the Higgs doublet, I'm going to use this matrix here. Why? You will see why. Because in this matrix, it's very simple to see how the custodial symmetry shows up. So let's do that. So then we take the Higgs action, and if you write what you knew about the Higgs doublet in terms of this new matrix, it looks very similar actually. So the Lagrangian for the Higgs expressed in terms of this matrix looks like the trace of Give me five. Give me. So you take the derivative over this matrix, multiply by the other derivative over the other matrix, and trace that, you will obtain precisely the kinetic term for the Higgs, and then you have the potential. The potential is also simple to express in terms of this matrix. This is simply minus mu squared trace of n. So it really looks like a master, but now this is a matrix plus lambda trace of f letter f squared. All right. So now let's see what symmetries are in the Higgs sector. Let's take this covariant derivative and how does it act on this matrix. Is going to be regular derivative minus plus ig over 2 of sigma a lambda mu. So this is the coupling with the W bosons, and then the way it couples to the hyperchurch is going to be minus ig prime over 2. Hopefully you saw that with Michael, phi sigma 3. Alright? This is the covariant derivative over this matrix. So what are the symmetries? Well, so this covariant derivative possesses the SU2 left cos U1 hypercharge symmetries. And let's see how SU2 left acts on this guy. Well, it sends this matrix to be just a matrix with this guy acting on the left, where L is an SU2 rotation, exponential of I theta A sigma. Alright. How does this act on the U1 hyperchurch? It's also very simple. Over the U1 hypercharge, phi, the matrix, goes as phi, and this the rotation. So, if you plug this transformation on this derivative term, d mu phi, d mu phi dagger, what you are going to obtain is that this guy, if you take the trace of this, this is going to go under the SU2 left as the trace of d mu phi dagger, L dagger, and then L d mu phi. Because this is an SU2 rotation, this is equals 1. And this shows that the kinetic term is invariant under SU2 left. No surprises, we know that the Higgs potential, the Higgs kinetic term is invariant under SU2 left cos U1. That's the way we engineer it. But I wanted to show what is the transformation, because now, if we take G prime to 0, we know that G is bigger than G prime, so it is a good approximation to take G prime going to 0. Then this kinetic term is invariant under a new SU2 transformation. We call it SU2R as opposed to left, where the field goes to right letter the field. Why do we need, so this is evident in this part, but why do we need to take G prime to 0? Is because we try to do this transformation on this part here, this guy will go to R daga 5, and there is no way, because the this rotation and this do not commute, there is no way of getting an invariance. So if we take G prime to 0, we get rid of this bothersome piece where the sigma 3 is on the other side, then there is a new invariance where instead of acting on the left of the field, you act on the right of the field. So, you see, that's why we call this new symmetry approximate, because you need to take G prime to 0, and it happens that G prime is smaller than G, and it's also accidental, because you didn't there is no reason why this global symmetry should be there. So this is an accidental approximate symmetry of the standard model. Why do we care about this accidental symmetry? Well, so now we know that when we take G prime to 0, the Lagrangian of the Higgs field contains two symmetries, SU to left cross SU to right. And under these two symmetries, phi goes as left, sorry, right, dagger, phi, left. So you apply these two symmetries at the same time, you obtain this. So now we are going to ask ourselves, what happens when we break electrophobic symmetry? Is this global symmetry still preserved? We have a very large, at this level, global symmetry. So after electrophobic symmetry breaking, we get that the my mass matrix is going to look like the red will be V0, 0, V. Remember, this guy was epsilon phi star, whereas this is the, was just my initial Higgs. So this bed breaks both the left and right symmetries. Indeed, because phi under the left symmetry goes to L phi. And if you put this there, you see that this is different from phi itself. Whereas on the R symmetry, phi goes to, sorry, yes, R dagger. Which is also different from the original matrix. So after the electrophobic symmetry breaking, we breaking as well these global symmetries in the Higgs sector. But what is interesting, and you know already from the little Higgs tutorial we did, what is interesting is to know which symmetries are preserved under this breaking. So after the electrophobic symmetry breaking, there is a subgroup of SU to left cross SU to right that is preserved. And this is called the SU to left slash right. So electrophobic symmetry breaking also breaks this symmetry down to this guy here, left slash right. Where is this left slash right symmetry? Well, so SU2 left plus right just means that is the simultaneous left and right transformations such that you set L to be equals to right. So we know what is the simultaneous transformation. So under SU2 left plus right, the field goes to this guy, but now left and right are the same. So this is the subgroup that is preserved under electrophobic symmetry breaking. So if you plug this guy here, you will see that it gives exactly the same. So electrical symmetry breaking produces also a breaking of the global symmetries SU to left, SU to right, of the Higgs vector alone, to SU to left plus right. This is also called sometimes the vector sun group, as opposed to L minus right, which is called the axial sun group. Okay. So we know that SU2 left plus right is protected under electrophobic symmetry breaking. And this is only a symmetry when G prime goes to zero. So the idea of this accidental symmetry is that rho is equals 1 thanks to this global symmetry plus some terms that depend on G square, G prime square. So the only, if we send G prime to zero, in a theory where G prime was very, very small, the prediction will be that rho is equals 1. We are going to see that in a moment. But what is important is not that rho is equals 1, is that any deviation from 1 has to be proportional to the parameter that is breaking the symmetry. This is what we call technically natural. As by send G prime to zero, I recover the original result. So any deviation from one has to come from having this parameter. Yes?
Is that the only problem having a linear term in G prime?
G and G prime?
A linear term in G prime.
A linear?
Instead of square.
Ah. So we know that it has to come from doing something with this part, with the hypercharge. Generally, because this is weak coupling, this something will be loops. So the first loop will go as G prime over 4 pi. So at least I need a loop involving G prime symbols. So but that's a very good question. So, yes, the counting is G prime because I need loops. So this is for the standard model. So now, let's try to extend this result to any kind of new dynamics, externally coupled dynamics, that produces electrophobic symmetry breaking. So imagine that now I don't have the Higgs. So I don't have my nice description in terms of this matrix, but I know I have electrophobic symmetry breaking. And this is due to some strong dynamics, which means I have no clue, in principle, of what's going on. But one thing I know is that at low energies, I had to be able to recover what I know. So at low energies, I had to be able to describe a Lagrangian, an effective Lagrangian at low energies, where I have the W's and the Z's and the photons, and these guys are massive. So at least from the point of view of low energies, all the effect of electrophobic symmetry breaking sector is to provide the Goldstone bosons that will provide the longitudinal components for W and Z. So the whole effect of electrophobic symmetry breaking at low energies is the presence of three Goldstone bosons that end up being the longitudinal W and the longitudinal Z. So you can always write down an effective theory where you have the standard model, much less W's and Z's, and three Goldstone bosons that will be eaten by W's and Z's. So instead of thinking about phi as a field, elementary field that gets a breadth, you can think on just the Goldstone boson part. So think on the sigma field, and this is going to be E sigma A divided by 2. So this is a representation of your Gorston bosons. So thank you. Yes, I need to provide a mass scale. You will call this guy F pi. And F pi will be end up being order what you call the width before or the mass of the zones, and that is. So you substitute the dynamics of the Higgs as an elementary particle as the dynamics of the only thing you care about at low energies, the Gorston bosons that the Higgs provide. So let's do that. Okay. So you start with a Lagrangian that contains the Higgs, and you end up with a Lagrangian, an effective Lagrangian that contains W, Z, and this sigma field. And the way these fields are getting masses, W and Z, is because there is a term of this kind over fourth of the trace of sigma Lagrangian. So this is the simplest way you will introduce the Gorston bosons, because this covariant derivative contains the W's and the Z's, and when this guy gets a left, you are going to get precisely the masses. So you can always go to the unitary gauge, meaning that the Gorston bosons are really eaten by the W's and Z's, which in this language means that sigma is equals 1. And this Lagrangian here is precisely going to give you the mass terms for W's and Z's. Why do we care about this description? It's because now we don't want to think about an elementary Higgs. We want to retain the essential features of the Higgs, which is providing these longitudinal polarizations. But we want to see what is the symmetry structure of this, asking for this kind of action. So we had to ask how sigma transforms. And the residue to left, sigma transforms as sigma, of course. And the residue to right, sigma as exactly as the Higgs did. And the residue to left plus right, you get that sigma goes to L sigma L dagger. So the same as the Higgs. So the action, the simple action you added for your Gorston bosons preserves this global symmetry. So adding Gorston bosons in this way preserves this global symmetry SU2 left plus right. And will provide masses, the same mass for the W and the Z, which is what you expected for G prime equals 0. So no matter how your strong dynamics happens and how well you understand your strong dynamics, at the end you have to produce at low energies a piece like this. And as long as this piece has this symmetry, is due to left plus right, this guy is going to be given the right masses for the W's and Z's. The right masses meaning the rho is equals 1 for this term. So, strong dynamics with this symmetry is able to say that rho is equals 1 plus order g prime over 4 pi squared. The symmetry is protecting this parameter for gaining big contributions for the strongly coupled sector, because the way the strongly coupled sector talks to the standard model is very controlled. It's through these kind of terms. And that controlling, if you want, is based on a symmetry, custodial symmetry, that makes that this rho is 1, which is what we want experimentally, plus order g prime over 4 pi squared. Okay, so we brought g prime square over 4 pi square because we know the hypercharge is weak coupling. We can do loop with that. But because we are talking about strong dynamics, do you have an expectation about this term here? Let's say I need a loop effect plus some function on my strong dynamics. At low energies, my strongly coupled sector produces what I want. But there will be corrections because this symmetry is protecting the row only when G prime is zero. So this, the structure of these corrections will be loop factors for G prime and some function of whatever strong dynamics is are going on there. So this is the problem of strong dynamics, that we are happy to have symmetries and protect things at leading order. But because our measurements are so precise, we would like to also obtain the next two leading order. What are the corrections? Exactly. So this could be, imagine this is a loop factor, right? This is a small coupling, this is a 4 pi squared. Still, because in principle I'm not saying anything about strong dynamics, maybe this loop factor involving strong dynamics gives me 100 or 1,000 as a numerical.
In principle, that strong thing could also.
Not necessarily. I could have a lot of low-lying states, like TV states, a lot of them, all of them contributing relatively symmetry making. But at the end of the day, I need to produce only three ghosts on bosons. But I could have a lot of massive guys giving me a big number here.
What's strong about that then? You mean just because it's not as much?
Not necessarily. It could be anywhere. As long as it. Well, strong, I mean, I don't know how to describe it perturbatively. So, the problem with dealing with strong dynamics and just using symmetries is that, okay, at least symmetries gives us a little bit of breath space because rho experimentally is very close to one, so we better get that. So with symmetries we can control the leading order, but we never know about the corrections. And there are worse things like that, right? Like, what is rho? Rho is related to the D parameter in the Peskin-Takenchi parametrization. Remember, S, T, and U were these reduced electrophobic parameters. And those have been measured to be very close to the standard model values. So you have a new sector, you have to measure that these guys are under control, because if your new sector is completely different from the Higgs sector, you are in trouble. So rho is 1 minus alpha t, where this is electromagnetic. So to have rho near 1 means that t is more or less 0. And we just discussed how imposing a symmetry, custodial symmetry, keeps this guy under control. So these are rational. But there are other parameters, for example, ds. I told you there are no symmetries protecting ds. And we haven't found any symmetries. And we have been looking for it for many years. So I know experimentally that S should be quite small, but I don't have any symmetry to protect it. So I don't have a rational why there is a small number in front, and worse than that, I don't even know how to compute this. So S in a strong coupling is a parameter that is incalculable. I don't know what is the leading order because there are no symmetries, and I don't know what is the leading order. So it's incalculable, as this thing here is also incalculable. You cannot calculate. Okay. So you know that in a LEP With low energy experiments, we collected, experimentalists collected a lot of data. And this is about 23 observables. So if you are a model builder, you build your model, you are very happy because it solves one problem, the hierarchy problem, for example. But then you want to check with experiment if your model makes sense or not. So one thing you can do is to write down all the possible corrections on the 23 parameters, do a best fit, and see if your model passes. Or be smart and say, well, Peskin and Takeuchi told me that in most cases, Takeuchi, I don't need to really compute the corrections to all these 23 parameters. I can compute corrections to these guys. We ST are new parameters which are essentially polarizations or loop effects on the Zs and Ws. So things that affect the Z, the W, or the photon in a kind of loop. Those are called oblique corrections. For a reason that will take some time to explain. But the idea is that first check you had to do is to look at ST and U, and if you fail to keep all these guys under control, to be near zero, then your model is doomed. So what Peskin and Takeuchi showed is that in most models of strong coupling, the S is incalculable. Well, but also you could use QCD as an analog for strong coupling, new strong coupling. And then in those models, the S was huge. So what Peskin and Takeuchi did for the field of beyond the standard model was to say, if strong dynamics look anything like QCD, forget about them. No one, no way. The S is huge. And we know S is zero, so, or even slightly negative. Why are these models dying? Is because there is no symmetry protecting the S, whereas there is a quick fix for the T. The T assumes some custodial symmetry, you are fine. Whereas for the S, there is nothing. Yes, exactly. But at least you can estimate how big this guy should be. So what Peskin and Takeuchi showed is that for strong coupling similar to QCD, this term is not overwhelming this one. So at least that was a test. Why did I tell you all this? It's just to tell you the following. We are going to talk about holography. And holography is building models, calculable models, that may be dual to a strong coupling. So we want models that are dual to a strong coupling, strong dynamics, and that are calculable. Meaning that in the model there is an expansion parameter, for example, weak coupling. The reason I want those models is because I can't do anything with strong dynamics. I cannot even obtain this factor here, or S is order a function of strong dynamics, or this factor here. But in the dual, I can do all these things. I can compute XLDS and XLDT. So we need dual models to get under control, find mechanisms to protect the S. And these mechanisms have to be dynamical. They cannot be symmetries because we know there are no symmetries for S. So we need dynamics. And that sounds like Randall Sundum. And also, we need dynamics or the duals to obtain what is this function here. Because our measurement of rho is much better than just saying one. So it would be very nice to obtain this function here. So you may take this as we need duals because we have no clue on how to do strong dynamics directly. So we need to circumvent this problem, calculational problem, with some imagination. The imagination is duals. So we are going to discuss duals. And I'm going to tell you how duals show up in strong versus weak duals show up in supersymmetry and in string theory, and then we are going to jump into the duals that are useful for phenomenology. And this is the paper I want you to read for tomorrow, and we will discuss tomorrow, on holography and phenomenology. But today, we are going to do a little bit of dualities in the formal sense. You probably heard that in the string theory there are dualities everywhere, right? Yes. So they started with five theories, and then they were able to move between all these string theories using different dualities, and now they realize that they have 10 to the 500th string theories, so doesn't matter anymore. But in the two dualities we are going to discuss, one is called, or I call it, cybergology, because it's due to a guy called Cyber, and it's called the electric magnetic duality. And the other duality we are going to discuss is what is called the ABS anti de Sitter CFT conformal field theory duality in string theory. There are many other dualities. Why do I want to talk about these two? It's because those two are strong versus weak dualities, and they have a resemblance to what we want. We want to describe gauge theories that are strongly coupled. So let's start with the cybergology. This is, cybergology is not in a string theory. It's simply a duality among supersymmetric theories. First, I guess I have to tell you what we want. So what we want is to build a dual between weak and a strong coupling. This is the theory I want. This is the theory I can calculate with. But to calculate anything and then in this theory and then say what it means in this side, we need a dictionary. This is called a dictionary. The dictionary tells me things like, what are the degrees of freedom in this side represent in terms of the degrees of freedom of this side? Or things like, what are the relations between coupling constants here or coupling constants here? Or what are the relations between symmetries in one side and in the other side? So what we are going to do is to build dictionaries of this type for the ADS-CFT. And then take these lessons that you want from ADS-CFT and move into a more phenomenological approach to the ADS-CFT. So to check that your dual is not completely crazy, you need to find some quantity in both sides and compare these two sides. Otherwise, it's just really guesswork. Right? So to be able to check a duality or to build a duality, I have to start with a bunch of symmetries, because thanks to symmetries, I'm able to say something in the strong and in the weak coupling. For example, so to form the dual, means that I need to do duality checks to make sure that I'm on the right tracks. And duality checks meaning computing or estimating something in the strong coupling. And as I said, the only way I can compute anything in the strong coupling is using symmetries. So the example is that in a strong coupling, I can say that rho is equals 1 plus order g per m squared over 4 pi squared corrections, even at a strong coupling. So I can use this symmetry, the custodial symmetry, to check that in both sides I'm using the right dual. So we will need to do a lot of duality checks. So we need to build a dictionary and do duality checks. We already have an explicit construction of a dual between stone and weak coupling, that's due to cyber. This guy looked at supersymmetric theories with n equals 1. And this little n, you will probably saw that with Freddy, right? Is the number of supersymmetries. So in the MSSM, you assume that n is equals 1. And you know, keep in mind that reality is that n is equal to 0. There is no supersymmetry in the low energy theory, right? So the more supersymmetries you add to your picture, the less realistic this is going to be, because you really need to break all of them to obtain a low energy theory with no supersymmetries. So the guy worked on n equals 1. That's already quite something. It's only one supersymmetry, and says the following. So he realized, with the help of Witten, that there is a phase in super QCD. Super QCD is just SU and C, a non-abelian theory, with n equals 1 in this case, supersymmetric super young Mills theory. And then realize that there is a phase in which this theory becomes super conformal. Yes, so it has its quarks, its gluons, it's the usual as in QCD. So supersymmetric QCD is going to be a super young Mills theory with quarks and gluons. But now let's see what is this super conformal limit. By the way, this is called SCFD. You will see that a lot. So why we know that in super QCD there is a conformal phase is because if we look at the beta function for the case of a supersymmetric theory, let me call the gauge the coupling E. Just because we want to talk about the electric magnetic duality. So you look at the beta function, it can be computed exactly, and it looks like something like this. Plus higher orders in epsilon and E, where epsilon is by definition 3 minus nf over nc. Yes. So this is a theory where the gauge group is SU and C, and there are nf flavors. So you have QNF. You have a bunch of quarks, and there are nf times nc of them. Why do I want to write down this? Because I want to find if there is a fixed point. And I don't know if you have seen anything. Okay, that's good. Okay, so I want a fixed point, meaning that beta at the fixed point is equal to 0. The coupling doesn't run. So let's find this fixed point. So if I set the beta function to vanish, I find that the fixed point looks something like 8 pi squared over 3 nc over nc squared nc minus 1 epsilon. Right? So at the fixed point, the theory is conformal. It doesn't run. So massless quarks, the beta function vanishes, there is no mass escape possible, so it's conformal, and because it's a super symmetric theory, you call it super conformal field theory. So there is a region in the supersymmetric QCD phase space where you find a conformal fixed point. So you say, so what? Why do I care? Well, what cyber-realize is near this fixed point, or in this particular phase space. So in superconformal field theory, you obtain that. I had my theory where I start with some coupling, and it evolves towards my fixed point. And this is, so I start as uncoupling, let's say, ultraviolet free or asymptotically free theory in the UV, and I flow until the IR, until I hit this fixed point, whereas I could continue and get to E equals zero. I can't, because the theory is flowing from the ultraviolet to the infrared, and as I arrive to the infrared, it realizes that there is this fixed point. So the theory at low energies is going to be the physics near this fixed point. What Cyber realized is that there is another branch that ends up in the same theory. It's called a magnetic theory. So this is the electric theory, and this is the magnetic theory, and they are running to the same fixed point. So he found an alternative theory that was able to run to the same low energy physics. What it means is that you have the electric and the magnetic theory, they have the same description at low energies, but at high energies they don't look at all like each other. In fact, he found out that the electric and the magnetic theory were dual, in the sense that when one was weak, the other was strong, and vice versa. This is very interesting because it's telling you that two completely different theories give you the same low energy description. So it is not telling you that there is a one-to-one correspondence between what's going on here and here at the same scales. It's just telling you that these theories flow to the same infrared description. But it means that if I want to, my fixed point is to obtain the standard model. Imagine that it's not this superconformal field theory, but some realistic theory. It will mean that I have two different descriptions that lead to the same thing. That's indeed very interesting, because it leads to the same low energy physics. So this is called, so we have two theories. They are different, but lead to the same infrared description. This is sometimes called quantum equivalence. So you see, there is no symmetry that moves from this to this theory. It's just that at low energies, they flow to the same infrared fixed point. What is cute about the cyberology is that this guy was able to write down the degrees of freedom of this theory and match them. I'm not going to get into that, but it was a theory of quarks and gluons that a strong coupling becomes mesons and baryons as QCD, whereas in this theory I have the same, quarks and gluons and mesons and baryons. Theories with completely different, with different numbers of degrees of freedom still lead to the same infrared description. So what we are going to do tomorrow is, please read this paper, or at least the first sections. We will discuss about it, and then we will start talking about the ABS-CFT correspondence in string theory. But the bottom line is that we are looking at these theories where we can really actually check both sides, because there are many symmetries, to build realistic theories that are dual to strong dynamics, taking the inspiration from these formal developments. See you tomorrow.